Welcome to the podcast of the First Presbyterian Church of Englewood, a community committed to live boldly, share boundlessly, grow community, and build God's world. Please visit us in person or at englewoodpres.org.
Our second lesson today is taken from the Gospel according to Luke, chapter 8, verses 26 through 39. Then they arrived at the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. As he stepped out on land, a man of the city who had demons met him. For a long time he had worn no clothes, and he did not live in a house, but in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he fell down before him and shouted at the top of his voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me." For Jesus had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man. For many times it had seized him. He was kept under guard and bound with chains and shackles, but he would break the bonds and be driven by the demon into the wilds. Jesus then asked him, "What is your name?" He said, "Legion," for many demons had entered him. They begged him not to order them to go back into the abyss. Now there on the hillside a large herd of swine was feeding, and the demons begged Jesus to let them enter these, so he gave them permission. Then the demons came out of the man and entered the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and was drowned. When the swineherd saw what had happened, they ran off and told it in the city and in the country. Then people came out to see what had happened, and when they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told them how the one who had been possessed by demons had been healed. Then all the people of the surrounding country of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them, for they were seized with great fear. So he got into the boat and returned. The man from whom the demons had gone begged that he might be with him, but Jesus sent him away, saying, "Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you." So he went away, proclaiming throughout the city how much Jesus had done for him. This is the word of the Lord. Well, I always believed in the stories of the Bible. I always believed in the healings that the Bible talked about. And when I was a kid, when I was in grade school, I broke my left arm pretty badly. And I remember lying in the hospital bed, and I decided that I would pray that my arm would be healed, because I knew I had complete confidence that God could bring a quick healing to my arm. I believed that God would knit the bones together right there. God did. Took 8 weeks. So not quite on my timetable. Still, give God the glory. The thing about that is that it is very easy for us to talk about asking God to heal our physical infirmities. We do this all the time. The vast majority of the prayer requests that come into our church or any church have to do with something physical that has happened. And yet, we see stories in the Bible about healing that aren't about the physical. They are about the person, the soul, the spirit that needs to be healed. And moreover, in this story, it's not so much a story about healing. It's a story about not being healed. You see, in our story today, we have this situation where you have this man who is possessed by a legion of demons, hundreds of demons. I mean, they're using a Roman term here, a legion, for just a whole company of demons that are within him. And the demons begin by not wanting to be healed, right? The demon request to Jesus, they understand who Jesus is, they understand his power, they're not denying anything. What they say to Jesus is, "Please, let us continue to be demons. Please allow us to continue to be demons." And Jesus, they know they're not going to be allowed to do it inside the person. So they're like, "Well, there's this convenient herd of pigs over here. Let us go inhabit the pigs so we can continue to be demons." The man, after the demons have left, is healed. But the townspeople have a very curious response to this. This man who they describe as having been so out of his mind that they would try to keep him in chains. And he would be driven out into the wilds, and there he would break the chains that had bound him and just run around without clothing. And they see this man sitting at the feet of Jesus, in his right mind, they said, in his right mind. And what was their response? They were afraid, and they tell Jesus, get out of here. We don't want you here, okay? What an incredibly interesting response to this incredible healing of a person who had been driven out of his right mind and was restored to his right mind. This week we've been wrestling with the question of what is the mind of our nation? What's the mind of our society? It's been an interesting week. And it's not just what happened in Orlando. You see, you look at this past week, and there were a few things that were interesting about this. One, of course, was the horrific tragedy, all right? So that we have this incredible assault upon a particular group of persons, the LGBT community, targeted for a massive killing. A couple days before the first anniversary of Charleston, where a group of African Americans had been targeted for a killing. And you say, what has changed? What has changed? What's different? And then now, if you go down the hill in Englewood and you go past, right along the railroad tracks in Van Brunt, you see an annual celebration that we have here in Englewood. It's called Juneteenth, the Juneteenth Carnival. Now, is there anyone here who doesn't know what Juneteenth is? Okay. Juneteenth is celebrated on June 19th every year. It's what they call a portmanteau, a merging of the two words of June and 19th. June 9th, it celebrates the idea that on June 19th, 1865, was actually the final abolition of slavery. You might say, hey, wait, the war ended in April of 1965. The Emancipation Proclamation was 2 years before that. But on June 19th, 1865, a messenger finally gets to a Union garrison in Galveston, Texas, with the news and the orders that the slaves were free. It's a wonderful order to read because it says, the former relationship of master and slave is now employer and employee by law. Why did it take literally 2.5 years from the Emancipation Proclamation to June 19, 1865 for that message to get there? No one knows for sure. There are a lot of legends. One of the legends, maybe it's true, maybe it isn't, is that one of the first messengers was shot before he could deliver the word. Certainly, there was even a theory that they didn't want the slaves in Texas informed until one last cotton harvest could be brought in. We don't know what the exact truth is. We do know that even after the war had been fought and the war had been won, there was still this further time before the abolition of slavery was acknowledged. And so now, 151 years later, we're still having celebrations about this day. It's a meaningful day in the African American community, which means it ought to be a meaningful day for all Americans to celebrate the actual end of slavery in the United States. So, Orlando a week ago, Charleston a year ago, Juneteenth being celebrated. What has changed? What does it take to produce change? See, there's this tremendous tendency in each of us, individually and societally, to be comfortable with the demons we know. We don't want to be. We are more afraid, like the townspeople, we are more afraid of being in our right mind, the mind we know that God wants for us. We're more afraid of that prospect than we are afraid of the demons we live with. It's very easy for us to say, these things happen, and we're very sad about it. And a year from now, something else will happen. And it will be a different group, and a different place, and a different town, and a different hashtag on social media. It'll be, we are whoever, wherever it is. It was, we are Paris a short time ago, and now it's, we are Orlando. What does it take to actually become comfortable with the change that healing requires? What does it take for us to decide, both individually and societally, that we don't want to remain unhealed any longer? This is a really hard question for us to confront. People want to come up with all kinds of political solutions, and I don't want to get into that because it's way too complicated. There are far too many factors to get into to measure that out. But there are individual things that we can do, that we can choose to do. All right. There was a talk given this week. There were vigils in many places, and one was held in Utah. Utah might be considered by many to be a relatively unusual place to be dealing with this. And a person who spoke to the crowd was the lieutenant governor of Utah. Now, he acknowledged he is a straight, white, conservative, Republican, you know, governor of Utah, addressing a crowd, many of whom were of the LGBT community, in mourning in the wake of Orlando. It's a long speech. It's a great speech. It traveled far and wide. But here are some of his words, and I'd like to read them to you. He said, I grew up in a small town and went to a small rural high school. There were some kids in my class that were different. Sometimes I wasn't kind to them. I didn't know it at the time, but I know now that they were gay. I will forever regret not treating them with the kindness, dignity, and respect, the love that they deserved. For that, I sincerely and humbly apologize. Over the intervening years, my heart has changed. It has changed because of you. It has changed because I've gotten to know many of you. You have been patient with me. You have treated me with the kindness, dignity, and respect, the love that I very often did not deserve. And it has made me love you. So now we find ourselves at a crossroads. Excuse me. A crossroads of hate and terror. How do we respond? How do you respond? Do we lash out with anger, hate, and mistrust? Or do we, as Lincoln begged, appeal to the better angels of our nature? Today we need fewer Republicans and fewer Democrats. Today we need more Americans. Ultimately, there is only one way for us to come together. It must happen at a personal level. We must learn to truly love one another. And so may we leave today with a resolve to be a little kinder. May we try to listen more and talk less. May we forgive someone that has wronged us. And perhaps more importantly, try to love someone that is different than us. But in order to do that, you have to go out of your way to try. See, it is so easy for us to surround ourselves with the like kind, the like-minded. Okay? We can go find a community in which everyone is like us. We can go hang out online and only chat with people who are like us. We can go and unfriend or block the people who disagree with us. We can listen, we can watch the cable channels that put forth our point of view. We have the power in our society today, as really hasn't existed in many ways for most of our history, to live in an isolated bubble. I mean, it happens in lots of different ways. Let me tell you a story that among Koreans that some of us have experienced, that for several of us have talked about it at times. Some of our parents, like my parents, ever since they retired and they stopped having to be in the work world, they're losing their ability to speak English. When they were in the offices, they had to converse with people in English all the time, but now they can watch Korean TV and go shopping in Palisades Park. English not required. That's a very practical and funny example, though, of what happens. That their ability to even exist fully and functionally in a more diverse community started to erode. It's not even that they never had it. They actually had it, and it starts to erode as they stop practicing it. The same happens to us, right? If we don't actually go out of our way to seek the interactions, to seek the relationships that will do that most frightening thing, just induce change in us, we'll never really be in our right mind as a human being. Because our right mind is to get past every prejudice, every stereotype, everything, every hateful impulse that we have toward others. It's to get past the people we are fighting with, struggling with, the people we don't like. But we have to put forth the effort to decide that we're going to put ourselves in a position to have those relationships, to have those interactions, and we can't be so afraid of what it would look like. Because it is fearful, you know? I mean, when we start to adopt the values of Christ, we can begin to worry about what would we be like. For example, you know, in myself, I can name one. I love to win. I love to win. I just do. And whenever someone reminds me that Jesus is not about winning, a little part of me says, yeah, but then you wouldn't be you anymore. Little part of me is afraid of what I would be if I lost that part of me, even though I know that's a part of me that Jesus would like me to lose. So I know that fear. And I'm sure we all have that fear in different ways. Have I grown to like a certain part of me that Jesus isn't proud of, but I like it so much, I'm afraid to let go of it? But if we don't let those demons go into the abyss, we become like the pigs. Demons entered the pigs. The pigs ran down the slope and drowned themselves. We will do the same to ourselves and as a nation if we don't have the courage to be healed. Don't just pray for the healing of your body. Now, I understand that those would not be comfortable prayers to have said in public. I understand that. It's not about that. But in your personal devotions, as you personally turn to God and ask for what you need in your life, remember the true healing that we all need. Amen.